The following podcast contains scenes of graphic violence, abuse, and reference to holy dominatrixes. Viewer's discretion is advised. Protect thy 1.5 brain cells. And I am procrastinating so much, it's not even real anymore. Please help me, anyone. Fancy Schmanzy listeners, this is Koi, the half-celestial host who rewrites reality. Today, I would like to tell you that, because this is something which a lot of people came up to me to talk about, that when I rewrite the reality, that is the dramatized version of reality, I by no means wish to disregard or insult the victims or the perpetrators or their families or anybody involved in the entire thing. I know that these are real people and that I do not have the right to just, you know, discredit their suffering. And I try my best to not do that. However, if at all anybody feels that I did, so I humbly apologize for it. And I try to be as sensitive as I possibly can be. But this is a podcast about death and me trying to deliver it in a manner which is kind of entertaining. So it's kind of twisted and dark in its own nature, but that's what you guys like and that's what you like to listen to. So yeah. And about today's story, it's going to be the story of Mary Vincent. It's a very, I would say, a well-known one. However, a lot of people do not know the very depths and the details about it. And that's what I'm here for. Like an actual very specific content warning for this one. It deals with aggravated sexual assault and extreme amounts of mutilation, to say the least. So the trigger warning and the listener's warning is very, very prominent and important in this one. So go away while you can. So let's dive right into the most lighthearted part of the podcast, designed to make you feel less horrible overall, the fishy news. So this one I read on Toronto Sun, and it's one of the best sites if you want to read like weird news and not real news, and you're like me basically. So the headline is, sinners, including priest and dominatrixes, charged in altar threesome. So that's a father we know. And it starts with this line, Lord have mercy indeed. I mean, this is gonna be a fun article. It states in the article, a former Louisiana priest and a pair of dominatrixes faced vandalism charges for having sex atop a church altar last September, according to a report. I mean, just imagine you are at a church and you ask someone, where's father? And they are like, son, he's coming. And then you're like, after a while, what is he doing? And the person replies, he's coming, son. And you're like, all right, I'll just wait for him to come, I think. So moving on with the article. However, the trio was arrested on obscenity charges because they were in the view of public. So okay, let's go back to the imagination. You're tired of waiting for the father to come. And from the looks of it, he can basically be your father too. But while passing by the church, as you are like disappointed in him not being able to come, you see him come. And suddenly, you're scarred forever. And then you remember the guy's word that he is coming. At least the people in church don't lie, after all. They also say the only sinner we have is the father. I mean, basically, yes, I do understand you are not supposed to come everywhere and it's kind of illicit to have sex at religious places and such. But it's the religion's fault to overly demonize sexual activities such that their own priests cannot really understand and follow them. So right back at ya, karma, bitch. The second one, and this is from BBC, you know, it says, Japan asks China to stop anal tests on its citizens. Well, fun if you read it like that way. But for the people who have a dirty mind, it's basically COVID anal tests. So the article says the existing tests were preferred as they believed most people contract the virus orally. So how exactly is this even working? I mean, I still don't understand. Like, do you have oral sex to get corona, or do you get and like then it's represented by your anus, and how do you contract the virus? What is even happening here? Whatever. I'm not a medical student. I do not understand biology. I'm basically a shitload of chemical reactions, and that's about it. I do not exist. So the test involves inserting a cotton swab 3 to 5 centimeters into the anus and gently rotating it. I do not know if the Japanese will get corona after visiting China or not, but they'll get an orgasm. I mean, the entire world is hooting for China to give them new ways to finger people and shit. So yeah, and you know, it also says some Japanese reported to our embassy in China that they received anal swab tests, which caused great psychological pain. I'm sure the pain was not only psychological if they did not like lube it well and properly insert it. But then again, most of the veterinarians, doctors and stuff, they just shove everything inside a dog's anus when they have to check its thermometer. So you are basically in the same boat. Anyway, talking about penetrating things without any real consent, today's Out of the Blue is about a dream I had. Not about copulation, it was a dream which was invaded. Thus, dream invasion. To which we'll get to after this ad break. I hope that you enjoyed my voice talking about amazing things. So, back to the Out of the Blue. Basically, what happened was that I had a dream about, I think last week somewhere around Wednesday, Friday, that I died. And a friend of mine also had a dream of what seemed like my funeral. So on the same night, we basically thought of the same thing. Like, me dying is kind of an untrue, half-true statement. The more accurate representation would be that my body left my soul. No, my soul left my body to go on some amazing adventure. And the weird thing was that when my friend was having his separate dream that I had died, he felt that my soul was happy and having the time of its life there. So there was no real need to worry. So he did not really panic in his dream. So that's kind of very interesting. So I went down this rabbit hole, and while researching, I was able to figure out that these kind of incidents usually happen when two people end up having lucid dreams, and which are basically dreams which either wholly or to an extent take part in the astral plane. Now, astral plane is something which has a lot of interpretations, and I won't get into it. Google is your best friend. As JC said in the listeners episode, go listen to it. It's all about you. Woof, woof. Anyway, so which in my case also kind of checks, because if I remember, my soul left my body to go to kind of an astral plane wherein things were nice. There were gods, there were goddesses. Like, it's a very long story. I may or may not cover it later on. Okay, so basically what happens during this is the invader enters the space of the dream and then interacts with the dreamer directly or indirectly. The invader can do this through meditation, some kind of ritual, astral projection, or even via their own lucid dreams. These are basically like the invasions are basically of two type: accidental invasion, in which occurs when both the people, like the invitee and the invader, have a very deep connection, which also kind of checks in this case. Like, we have a deep connection of friendship, guys. He does not get deep inside of me to maintain that connection. FYI, I'm sure nobody thought of that, but why not? No, why not? No, why not? Nobody's getting... What the fuck? Stop. Getting back to my friend penetrating my dreams. So, where was I? So, accidental invasion. So, the person just ends up being pulled into or inserted into somebody else's dream without either expressed consent. Mostly it's speculated speculated that I have lost myself in the article. Where am I? Yeah, and it's mostly speculated that the involuntary entry or the penetration is because of the dreamers or the dreamies or the inbreedies. I'm so confused with all these terms. And basically due to their natural abilities. And this all entire thing also kind of holds true in my case, as my soul was in a different place, but according to the dream, I was existing in two different planes and three in total, the one where my consciousness lies. So my friend visited me in the plane where my consciousness of the unconscious in the dream lied. Kind of weird, but okay. The second one, which is the most fun one and really inspired me to make another it basically gave me fodder to make more 3-4 different paranormal episodes. That is Purposeful Invasion. The movie Inception is basically based on this concept. This invasion basically helps the invader feed on the emotional energy created during the dream state. This is usually in the form of terror dreams, although they can also be called lust dreams or wet dreams, as the church would like to call it. The energy is often created towards feeding an enslaved spiritual identity or being. These entities are often known as incubuses or succubuses. There are also other theories, such as these are basically alien abductions, and these experiences in like also amount up to these things and what's the thing called? Regular sleep paralysis. Yep, like normal sleep paralysis, the Japanese old crone, and among other demons which come to induce that. Now, this is somewhere that we start to get into territory, which, as I said, keeps on inspiring me to make more paranormal episodes. So take this as your Easter egg and stay tuned. Also, for the ones who were like basically totally confused during the entire thing, what is the basic difference between an invasion and a nightmare? So the difference is basically very subtle but rather noticeable. Trust me on that. So nightmares are typically formulated around your personal stressors. For example, if you're scared of bees, your nightmare will most probably do star bees and such. Okay. Nightmares are typically self-contained and abstract in nature. Anything can happen at any time whatsoever. And experiences are vague and the images in themselves lack specific details, textures, smells of things, etc. Dream invasion, on the other hand, has a lot of detail because it is technically at places on a different plane of existence. So you remember a lot of it. So yeah, and the most important thing about this is the interaction that you have with other people during these dreams. If that interaction is something that you've experienced before, then it's most probably a dream. And if it's something new, then it is not a dream. These interactions are very often very persistent and do not shift or change unlike dreams. And they're very, very logical. So yes, out of the blue, that's the end of it. Today I really have not worked on transitioning from out of the blue to the main story, so I'm gonna ram myself into this wall and tell you the story is called Hook, and the date that I've given to it, which is I believe historically accurate as well, 1st October 1978. The time is 21 hours 2 minutes. I start reading. I think this is why mom asked me to tie my hair up. All the perpetual yanking up my hair would have helped me mitigate this awful headaches. Miss Karma's voice. I love this name, Miss Karma's. If you do not know what karma is basically a Hindu concept, blah, blah, blah. Everybody knows what it is, right? So Miss Karma is basically a hippie woman for all practical purposes. So Miss Karma's voice echoes in my head. Slow, quiet breaths. That's the key of life. A slow breath, oxygen is abundant, but that does not mean you have to use it all up. Pace your breaths, she used to say. I mean, usually it was easy, but right now I was pacing out as if my mind was breathing in and out with the rest of my body. When I was writing this, suddenly my brain decided to imagine that when she was breathing, there was some kind of headache so strong on her head that her brain literally went inside and out and started to beat like that. Wow, okay. My brain is kind of a bitch. So taking risks, each time there was darkness, I always found myself in a brown room with dirty tapestry. Here, I was kept in what felt like an aquamarine, which is a very beautiful crystal, by the way. Everything outside has tainted itself, teal, green, blue, yellow, and kept on reminding me to step out, as I couldn't let this be done like this. Before I could ask the woman in front of me who she was referring to, I came back to the dirt and the mud, the weeds and the blood. I turned around a little. I couldn't let my muscles flow out. I roll around more in the mud. Maybe this could help me clog all the fissures in my body. I somehow made myself take half a turn towards my right and let the breath I had held in out. As I did that, my brain went black again. On the side note, my cat has started eating his food, so if you hear weird munching, stomping voices, it's him, not me, doing not human things, which does not obviously includes breaking bones. Just now I took a break for 5 minutes. I closed my eyes and I legit went to sleep. And I just woke up again and I'm back at recording. I do not know if you guys realized that. If you did, amazing. If you did not, amazinger. Because, yeah. So back in the crystal, she found herself. You're protected. You're safe. You're stronger than all of this. You know that. I know that. Because I know you. Now wake up and start to roll. Keep your head and arms up. This is more than enough for now. As the air started to come back in through my nostrils, I felt the weeds beside me pulling me back. Its tender tip has tangled with my hair. It was stretching out as if it was helping me getting back on my back. Now, I did. I smiled at the weed as its tip broke and now permanently inhabited my ear, my hair. My cat just opened the door on his own. Fun cat. The tip broke and now inhabited my hair, maybe as a keepsake. My right arm was now also clogged up with mud. The blood was had kind of stopped. I really cannot say. I tried to yank myself to my left side, but to no avail. I wait. I close my eyes, but this time I don't go back to the room of the lady. Rather, I feel the breeze on my legs and abdomen. It wraps itself around me as if telling me that it will support me. Just a little more effort, then the elements will support my existence. You know, this is so fun to imagine. Like, if we are to take out the fact that she does not have arms and has stubs for it, which are also bleeding. Each time, imagine you're having a hard time, the elements come down to talk to you and assure you just do a little bit more, and after that, it's gonna be me who's gonna be doing that stuff. Huh, that would be so romantic, I'm not even kidding. I jerked off my shoulders to turn as I did. I think I crushed my arm even more, though that's immaterial. Before the pain could reach me, I was back in the blue room. Look, I knew that you were able to do it. You're the strongest person out there, my love. The step one is done. All that is left is to climb. You've made this far. Keep your arms, head, and hopes up. This isn't the end. When I came back this time, there was mud dripping from both my arms. I was on my legs already. It felt as if the breeze had kept its promise of helping me. If I was ever to help myself, ever so slightly. I used the pipe's walls, which were closing in on me a while back, whose intentions originally were to keep me hidden in the soil's womb, now just aided me and supported me as I was walking out. Out there laid my strongest foe yet. I tried to walk on it. My breaths were now getting slightly more rapid than before. I'm not going into the room as often anymore. I took 3 steps, my ankle twisted, and I fell. As I fell, my soul cradled me down as if it was a satin sheet. Some pebbles, yes, it felt like mites, but I think it was all right. I think I know that we know that it will all be all right. The next timestamp that I've given is that of 30th September 2021, 23 hours and 8 minutes. I like how just I put this thing down in the future. If something happens on this day which kind of resembles the events of the story and anything, I really did not wish this kind of misfortune on anybody. But yeah, so I write. The aquamarine is intact. I know that she's out there, out of the cave now. It's been 40 minutes since she came for me the last time. The crystal hasn't shattered yet. She made it out. I'm glad. My ritual for the year is done. When Mary needs Mary, Mary is here. I keep the aquamarine back into the cedarwood box. I look at the 7 shattered aquamarines at the red center. I lock the door until the next time when Mary needs Mary. Mary is here. So, the woman in the room was Mary herself, which is Mary Vincent, the person, the protagonist of the initial one part, if you were not paying attention before. So yeah, that's the story. Now, this story has very strong references from the real life events as well. Yeah, that's about it. The talk about the aquamarine and the aquamarine chattering and all that is, of course, my additive thingies, like additive, imaginative parts. But it is said that Mary, when she was stuck in a specific situation, did get a lot of inspiration to get out from it. And we'll get to it when we'll be discussing about the true crime incidents. So this all basically happened in 1978 when Mary Vincent was 15. She grew up in Las Vegas in a military family. She was a middle child of total 7 kids. Now, one fine day, her sister called her up and said, "Dad has a migraine, he's pissed at you and he's coming home." Now, some of the articles just suggest that her saying this made Mary want to run out of her house and voila. But some other articles, which makes a little more sense, say that Mary was also like used to running from home very often because she was 15. She was a very great dancer and she was basically financially stable and in her rebel phase, and voila, so she used to run around a lot of and times, and when she was like, the dad has a migraine and such, and she being the middle child, it's kind of awkward. Like, her childhood was weird before this too. Okay, so she just ran away like people do. So during this time, she says that she spent some days on park benches, a couple days with her uncle, and she spent approximately 2 months or so, according to yet again some sources, which I'm not very sure about, out of her house. So In the morning of December 29th, 1978, she decided to hitchhike her way. Oh, it's December 29th. I thought it was October 29th. Like, I've written December, let me confirm. So, yeah, I was right. It was 29th September. I'm not sure why I've written December 29th in my notes. So, yeah, it was December 29th, 1978 that she decided to hitchhike back home from, back home to Las Vegas from Berkeley, California. Now, when she was at the freeway, like, having the sign, she was accompanied with two other hitchhikers, and yet again, according to some sources, an empty van drove up, and some other car, some other sources say that it was not an empty van, it was a Corvette convertible. Alright, but something which is common with every one of the stories is that it was basically empty and there was just one bag in the whole van slash whatever car that it was. But the guy inside said, "I only have room for one of you, and it's you," as he pointed towards Mary. The other two people, they were like smarter, obviously, and they were kind of miffy about it, that don't go, and they try to tell it to Mary, but there was only one thing on Mary's mind, that she was determined to go home. She just wanted to go home, and that's all about it. So, against all better judgment, she got in a car with this guy who was kind of clearly creepy. Not a really good start here, okay? So, the man in the car was Lawrence Singleton, who is a 51-year-old merchant mariner, and he was wearing blue clothing at that time. And this was something which was reported to the police to the later stages. So, like, almost right away, things started to get awkward. Like, when Mary started to smoke, she sneezed. And, like, he was maybe waiting for a cue or something, that as soon as she sneezed, he took his extended his arm out to her and put it on her neck and asked if she's sick. She pulled herself away from it and she was like, "I don't want to do anything with you." She was like, "I'm 15, bitch, you're 51. Distance, okay? And it was like, "All right, okay," and they went on to drive. Though this was creepy and pervy, she was also 15. I mean, I really do not blame her. And she was tired, so she ended up going to sleep. Now, after hours or something, whenever she wakes up, she realizes that they're going east, not south, to Los Angeles. Now, she's like, "Okay, bitch." So she picks up a little sharp object. I could not really find out what this said sharp object is from the floor of the car, and she points at him and demands an explanation. Now, this again signifies that she is a very strong girl with a very strong will. Now, the guy, he got like really baffled and he was like, "It was an honest mistake. I'm an honest man. I'm not gonna harm you." Like, very non-guilty things to say. He was like completely freaked out about the sharp object and was not expecting that. Thus, he promptly turned his car to the right direction, and voila. So she thought that would be about it. Now, one would also think that why did she not get off the car right there and then? But when on the highway that they were at, the freeway for you amazing Americans that they are at now, was kind of totally isolated, and if she would have gotten off on a random place on the middle of the road, on middle of the nowhere, it would have just been as bad. So a while later, after this incident, Larry said that he needs to go use the washroom. So he pulls over, and Mary at this point realizes that this could be a sign of trouble. So she decides to sneak out and run away. So when she decides to do that, she sees that her shoelaces are undone and she started to tie them. I mean, she is a very healthy teenager. She can easily outrun this pig. Now, when she was tying her shoelaces, Larry came from behind and hit her head twice with a sledgehammer. She obviously lost consciousness, and once she woke up, she found herself at the trunk of the van, or in the back seat of the Corvette, where Larry forced her to perform oral sex on him. Now, it's said that throughout the night, she was raped 6 times in total. He'd only stopped to make her drink alcohol from a milk jug, which is a detail which I do not know why I've put in here and why it was a detail at all. So she was basically kept drugged, and he himself was kind of drugged out in this case, because once he fell asleep, Mary did try to escape, but she couldn't really escape because of the injury on her head. And the guy, he used to keep on waking up from sleep and going back in and like in and out, in and out. And the entire time, Mary just kept on repeating one thing. She says, "Let me free, let me free, let me free." So after a very long time, they drove a little bit more. At this point, he had stripped her completely naked. And he untied her on the side of the road. And one would imagine that he did his deed and now he's maybe letting her go at like a desolate area that he won't be caught or something, right? But he said that you'd want to be free, I'd set you free. And as he said this, he grabbed a hatchet and started to swing it randomly. Now, one of these swings touched her left arm under her elbow, and when this happened, she tried to grab him with her left arm and she started to fall. She could not understand why she was falling, and she felt an intense pain in her left arm, but she like grabbed him, as I told you before, but she kept on falling. Now, when she looked at her arm, she saw there was nothing there, just blood squirting out. She said that she felt it all, that the warm blood flowing out, the pain. And with that, she slowly and gradually fell down. Not slowly and gradually, like she fell down, but it felt like ages to her. And when she was down, that guy took the hatchet on her right arm, and hit it the first time and it did not cut through. So it took him a total of 3 swings before he killed before he chopped her right arm properly. And yeah, and after this entire affair, he went on his side, and Mary saw that he was like flicking his arms very violently. She could not, and she was conscious, but she was so numb that she was not saying or doing anything. She was just laying there. I mean, imagine both your arms are cut, sledgehammer wound, you've been raped. Okay. So she says that she looks at him and he is like, you know, flicking his arm, and she sees that her left arm was still clenched and he was trying to take that off. And now some sources say that once he was able to remove her arms, he took both of her arms and started to dance in front of her. And this is literally giving me goosebumps. I'm not even kidding. I want to fucking kill this guy. There's this Japanese method that I saw that you can summon a demon onto a person, and while still be pooping, the demon is basically gonna use suction on their ass, and their body will poop the entire body out, and they'll basically come inside out. And that's what I want to do with fucking Larry. Okay, so now this asshole, I told you that she is very numb at this point. So he thinks that she's basically dead. He takes her body to a nearby cliff. The cliff is like about 30 feet or so from the ground. It's basically like the highway is 30, 40 feet above. Excuse me. And he throws her into the cliff. Now, during her fall, she breaks 4 ribs and she hits the ground But Larry thinks that once she was drowned, that she was out in the open. So he dragged her to a nearby concrete tube, which now, after not using it for a while, ended up becoming kind of like a cave. And he left her there to die. Now she was in a cave 30 feet below and completely naked with her arms severed off. Now this is the point from where my story started, because at this point that she has basically lost all hope to live kind of. Yes, dogs, please bark, that because that's what we want now. Let me see. Oh my god. This is my own dog, you know, because he's the first. So, hi. Now I'm back after my dog ruining a perfectly nice flow. Now, when she is in the cave, she hears a voice inside of her and outside of her at the very same time, she says, and it is asking her to get up, get help, or someone else will die. So her basic, you know, intention, I don't know, basic drive was that she cannot let the same thing happen to anybody else. Now she is a very smart person, because she then rolls her elbows onto the mud and ends up patching up the wounds, because that filled up the area and stopped the bleeding. And one would imagine that if you fill your wounds up with mud, it's gonna get you infected or something, and yes, it would, but for the time being it would help and will go merry. She's very smart. I am absolutely in love with her. She's a hero. Okay, so she somehow does this. She holds herself up. She climbs to the top of the hill. Now this hill is 30 feet. You have sledgehammer impact, you do not have arms, you've been raped. So it took her almost the entire night and multiple attempts to climb up the hill, and there are pictures of it online, and it's not a very, an easy climb. It's a rather steep. Oh my, now this is a neighbor's dog barking. Why do I live in this neighborhood where everybody has a dog? Literally everybody has a dog, and they're all equally irritating. Though I love mine, he's nice. He at least shuts the fuck up when I ask him to. So, yes, please. I'm not gonna stop now. Let them bark. I think my voice is too beautiful to be stopped by this. Okay. Now, when she was finally able to climb up the mountain, she heard sounds of traffic, and she started to walk towards this. And now this again was 3 to 4 miles away from where she was, because she was taken to a very desolate road. Once she reached the main freeway, she started walk she had been walking for a while now. And she held her arms upright, because otherwise her muscles would have fallen out of her body and all hope for a proper recovery would have been kind of destroyed. So she is completely nude. She is dirty. There's mud all over. There's blood all over. And she has 2 stubs for arms. Now, when the very first car that she encounters is a red Corvette with 2 men inside. They are mostly going for a vacation or something, and they did not stop for her. She says that they kind of slowed down, but then they rushed away. Now this is obvious, she says, because she kind of looked someone out of the horror movie, and she does not really blame her. Mary is a very nice person again. The next car was a couple on a honeymoon who just happened to take the wrong exit and ended up on this side of the freeway. They saw her and immediately stopped the car. They wrapped her in the towel and she sat in the back of their car, and the only thing she was able to say to them was that he raped me. Now, she was airlifted to an hospital. She had lost so much blood in her body that they could not really wait for an ambulance. It said that she lost half of the blood in her body, and whatever was left was completely toxic. And she was supposed to be, like, technically one would imagine that she would be dead after all this damage. And the doctors even said it's a complete miracle. Now, she was young. She was a very healthy teenager. So that could have been a major, major, major factor that she survived. And so, yeah, and her will too. Now, at the hospital, Mary was able to give a very detailed description of Lawrence Singleton. And it was so detailed that when it was telecasted on television, one of the neighbors of Lawrence's immediately identified him and reported him to the police. Now, really imagine this. There was this show when I was younger, which I used to watch, and in which the dude was like, "Imagine your father is the killer. Is the father sitting with you?" And kind of shit. And imagine you are actually sitting watching at the TV, a photo comes up, and that's your own father or your neighbor. How fucking creepy would that be? Now, I have written again 2 months after the incidents. I really need to confirm the dates again. So I really don't know, guys. Half of my notes, they show the dates as December, and the entire building up and everything has been considered with December. But some of the articles which I'm looking at now are saying September, but it's also Wikipedia, so it's most probably wrong. And so I am really sorry for this. I have no idea how this is happening. And for your information, there's going to be a lot of background noise right now, because it was around 3 o'clock that I started recording this, and while recording it I went to sleep, and it's currently 7 o'clock in the morning. I just woke up, and I've asked my parents not to like go back to sleep again. They are also awake for no good reason, because parents love to waking up early. So it's kind of that, and It's a fun experience to, and I've not even brushed my teeth, and I'm a person who does not speak without brushing their teeth. Yeah, so that's it. So there's going to be a lot of noise all around, so please ignore that. And today's also the kind of the last day to record this, because I have to, broadcast or telecast, whatever one does with a podcast episode, in like 15 minutes, not in 15 minutes, in like, 3 hours, 4 hours, whatever. Okay, sorry for that. So basically, 2 months after the entire incident, according to my research, that makes it March 1979, and by common sense, it should be December 1979. Lawrence was sentenced to 14 years of jail for his doing. He was, charged with kidnapping for forcible rape, forced oral copulation, attempted murder, sodomy, and mayhem. Now, it was the maximum sentence for all of these which was allowed at this time. Now, the judge did say, "I will put him in jail for the rest of my life if the justice allowed it." The justice system was shitty, and justice was not really just. Now, Mary was present during the entire trial. Now, imagine all of these things. Close your eyes and start to imagine it. Now, at this time, she had prosthetics instead of her arms, and she had started to get used to her new life. During the trial, she was so scared of him out of obvious reasons that she could hardly look at him. But she anyhow testified. Larry testified, and she said that she was a $10 night whore and she had done nothing to her. He claimed that there was another person in the car who was called Larry and who did all of these things. Now, how fucking stupid somebody can be. Like, you cannot even think of a name other than yourself. There just happens to be another guy who's exactly as old as you, who wears clothing just like you, who has the same name as you in your own car, who did these things to marry in front of you, most probably, considering your testimony, and you still did not do anything. It also does not put you in a very nice light. You are an accomplice, if nothing else. Now, when she was leaving the courthouse, she had to pass inches away from his existence. And as she passed, he came near her and whispered in her ear, "If it's the last thing I'll do, I'll finish the job." After this, she obviously got freaked out and she ran out of the court and she said she could not do this anymore. Mary also filed for compensation for what he did to her by the court. She was compensated for $2 million, but she did not get the money as Larry had only $200 in his account. Now, you'll be like, okay, fun, 14 years, at least that's enough time, right? But no, because this is something I understand, forgiving people and people can change, but these assholes. Now, Larry served only 8 years in jail in place of 14 because of his good behavior. And he was a moral prisoner, and he was out. He was asked to get out on parole. Now, though, after Mary's case, Californian state was forced to change their rules and regulation, and the minimum sentence was increased to 31 years for child rape. Now, also about him being a moral prisoner for the 8 years of his sentence, he built up this defense mechanism in his own brain that he did not do anything, that it was all a lie and such. Already, and this is something that people knew before releasing him, and more, even if he was a moral prisoner, but he does not feel bad about what he did. He does not even consider that he did anything whatsoever. Now, but still, no, let's release him because he was not a very shitty person in prison. So after 8 years of his sentence, nobody really let him live in his house or society or neighborhood. Every single town that they would put him in, they would start to protest and riot. Not a single person was really interested in staying around, which I totally support them for. They did not let him join the society wherever he used to go. The police was called because there was protest. Now, it was so bad for him that finally the governor of California decided to set him on a trailer on the grounds of St. Quentin Prison. So that's how you give justice. If the justice system's shitty, even on parole, you get to live on the, you know, jail. Now, at this point, Larry decided to sue Mary, and he says that he remembers Mary threatening him to accuse him of rape, that she brandished sharp objects at him in the car, and that Larry was mistreated by the court because he's a man. Now, he sued Mary for forcible kidnapping and for the purposes of robbery. Now, he says that it has been a very difficult time for him, like, all our sympathy goes to Larry. And but since he's a nice person, he even said that he had sympathy for Mary. He says after suing her that he was not able to sleep for nights and he kept on vomiting and he was sympathetic towards her cause. You stupid piece of shit. And though it's sad, according to him, that it did not really get any attention and the case wasn't even trialed. Now, fun fact, Larry also had a daughter called Deborah, who was also 15 at the time, and she was the same age as Mary. She was also terrified of her father, and she said that she really didn't want her in her life and kept a distance. When she heard she was getting out, she actually asked the court to keep him in the prison longer, but she told them it was like just don't, all right? She said that I was suggested to make a restraining order against him from court. Now, I mean it quite sarcastically, but I'm here changing my name and state again and again. So you suggest that I get a piece of paper with my exact name and location, which will tell him to stay 300 feet from him. Great. I mean, obviously, if you're running away from somebody, you won't put a restraining order on them. All right, Dad, do not look at my face, but I live at this address. And since by this paper of law, you are a vampire and not allowed to walk into my house. Yeah, but he was released on parole. And as I said, California was not nice to him, but he ended up shifting to Florida. All right, they weren't really welcoming, but a car dealer even offered him $500 to leave the state of Florida and, you know, just go the fuck away. For a little while, he stayed at his brother's house and brother's place. I'm not sure if it was a house at all. And then he moved to a small town where nobody really knew about him. Now, in 1997, almost 20 years after the Maris incident, he was in a quite nice neighborhood now. It was, and he ended up marrying a woman called Roxanne Hayes. Now, she was 31. She was mother of three. Hayes was, he did not marry her. I'm really sorry. He got into contact with her. All right. She was a sex worker in the area. She was an addict and all the things which make her a very easy target for all the assholes. Now, like, take Roxanne into account. And one of the neighbors, one fine day when they were walking, they saw that a woman was screaming and crying for help. Now, Larry at this point would be a 60 or a 70 year old man. So one's like, all right, he's a cute guy. He's a cute old guy. But still, if there's screamings from anybody else, please call the police, no matter who that is. Okay. When the police arrived, Larry was shirtless and he was totally drenched and covered in blood. They asked him what happened. And he's like, oh, I just cut myself by like chopping throats. And the police was smarter than this. And they got inside the house. And what they saw was basically, whoa, yeah. So a woman's body became visible and he was arrested immediately. The body was that of Roxanne's. He stabbed her on the face and upper body multiple times. This time, the state, and like after hearing of this incident, and Roxanne was like butchered. I'm not even kidding. She was butchered. And I really don't want to put in any details of her death. I'm really sorry for that because it was too much for me to research or to write about at the time. Okay. And Mary came down to Florida and she testified against him for the second time. So this testimony that she gave, she did it looking right into his eyes. Okay, and finally he was sentenced to death penalty, but only 3 years after him being convicted, he died because of cancer. Karma, you fucking bitch. So one would say it is kind of a happy ending. However, Mary's life after the incident was a very long process of mental health recovery. As you all know, she was a dancer when she was younger. After her hands were cut, they used her leg muscles to rebuild her arms, which really left little strength in her legs to dance and such. And a lot of her friends started acting weird around her due to what she had lost. Due to which she lost a lot of friendships. And in the 70s, I would say, and she says that the mental health system was not really up to par and nobody really was able to give her any attention. She was trying to cope up with her parents, but the parents weren't really able to help her cope properly. And Which is completely fine. I mean, one would imagine that parents would be supportive, and I'm sure that they were. But imagine if your child walks in with no arms, raped, with and being entire national thing. You, a parent, is not prepared for that. Everybody needs counseling, and that's like too much. Parents are not prepared for the children to come out to them and like go all shitty gaga on that. All right, so parents are weird people, but we cannot really blame them about things because they are human beings as much as we would not like them to be. Okay, so she tried to live a life away from the press, but as soon as Larry got out on the parole, she reached like a new level of paranoia and fear. She restricted herself from getting out of the house. Her relationships with her friends and family were obviously in shambles due to this. Now she struggled for a very long time with PTSD and depression, but she got married later on and she had two sons who were basically everything to her. Though she got divorced, but it did not really affect her because all she wanted were her sons and she got the custody for them. Now, after Larry's death, Mary says that it wasn't really a relief as such because she wanted to look at his eyes into his soul, and she felt that she was basically robbed of this opportunity. Now she felt relief when she looked into her son's eyes after the death of Larry, who was basically very young, and she saw that there was relief in her eye, in his eyes, and she felt good about that. Now she kept a lot of pets in her family before her marriage. She also started painting, and after her marriage she kept two dogs and they're absolutely adorable. I saw their pictures online because I'm a stalker. And she became a very successful artist. Some of her works are valued at $2,000 and it's cute, you know. And yeah, so that's about it. That's the story of Mary Vincent. Now I would take this time to tell you about something that happened to me, not to me, to things around me yesterday. And oh, wait. I'm gonna mix all these things up now. Now, yesterday, my parental uncle is diagnosed with intellectual disability and autism, and he lives with us. Now, he was stabbed by someone around 9:30, 10 yesterday, and the stab wasn't very deep, fortunately, and he didn't tell us, and we went to his room after it all, and there was a cut on his t-shirt. There were a lot of cotton with drenched in blood all over his room, and he went to one of the neighbors because he did not feel safe. I would use the word, he did not feel safe telling us that he was stabbed. And then he went to the neighbors. They asked him what happened, and they saw the entire cut, and he was basically bleeding out on their porch. And then he was taken to the hospital. Thankfully, it's nothing serious. It's not a very big cut either. But the doctor was like that he was obviously stabbed. Now, as I told you, because of his disabilities, he is not able to tell anybody what had happened. He keeps on changing his narrative. Now, we were talking to him, and my parents, out of concern, were like, "Oh my God, you're lying. Tell us the truth," and stuff, which kind of defeats the entire person purpose, because the man A is very scared they were stabbed. And you cannot expect everybody to be a hero at these positions, at these times. And instead of comforting and protecting, giving him like a protective environment, everybody went on to interrogate him, really. And that was kind of annoying to me. And I was like, I mean, this is now what you do. You first comfort the person. And you fucking know your place, because if you do not start interrogating people just out of the blue, unless and until you're equipped to do it. And it's not that you think you are equipped to do it. You have a degree, you know how to deal with such people, and you genuinely qualify for these things. All right. Even when it came to Mary, and when she talked about how she was inspired to wake up and go, people were like, no, that's not possible. A 15-year-old cannot think like that. Or the other few assholes who were like, oh, Mary, like, she was so strong, and like, all rape victims should be like this instead of cutting a sorry figure. Now, not everybody is a hero. Mary Vincent is an exceptional young woman, and at that time, and now she is an exceptional woman, and she's an exceptional young woman. She's the most amazing person in the entire universe who has gone through hell and back and still survived, and now she's thriving on that. Okay, but that does not give you the right to go ahead and tell everybody else that you get to be stronger. You do not get to tell people that how you're processing your grief, how you're processing your trauma is wrong, or what you're doing is wrong. And this is very, very annoying. And people do that more often than I'd like. This is something which has happened to me. Once upon a time, I remember I went to a teacher because this person kicked me or punched me, something happened, and she was like, why are you cutting a sorry figure in front of me? You should stand up for yourself. And that's, you do not force people to be stronger, and this is not making them stronger. This is making them feel that the world is out to get them. Huh. Yeah. So that's it. That's it for the story. Please be nice people. Show protection to people over everything else. And on that note, this is the end of today's episode. It's hosted by Koi On Air. It's co-produced with Nefix the Music. The amazing amount of music is by Liladi. And you can contact me on @KoiOnAir on Instagram and Twitter. I'm so angry and annoyed. I really don't want to do the credits anymore. But yeah. And you can mail me on koi@madebenefix.com. We already have released our first listeners episode on 29th March. Go listen to it. It's all about you guys. Send me your own stories. And if you want, I can rewrite your reality. If you don't want me to rewrite your reality and you want me to read your mail as it is, I will do that. And that mail made me so happy. Now, bye-bye, you alligators. And dog started to bark again. It's morning. I'm recording in the morning. And this was actually more fun because I feel I'm more fresh. So this podcast took about 12 hours to record, like this episode in specific. So fun that.